No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to the inaugural edition of Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. This week, we're going to discuss that issue which is most important to me and also the 630,000 loyal American citizens who live in our nation's capital. Equality for the people of the District of Columbia, which many of us believe can only happen by making the district the 51st state. As you may or may not know, the District of Columbia is the only capital city of any democracy in the world where the residents are denied the same rights as all other citizens. We call D.C. America's last colony because that's exactly what it is. We have no voting member in the House of Representatives, no member who is recognized by the United States Senate. We have limited home rule where all our laws are subject to the approval of Congress, and even our locally collected taxes cannot be spent until Congress and the President sign off on our budget. We did not even have the right to vote for president until 1964. So that's it in a nutshell. We are denied the most basic civil rights of our democracy. Taxation without representation exists to this day in Washington, D.C., more than 230 years after the Revolution, and we need to fix this political anachronism and free the 630,000 colonists who reside in our nation's capital. Before we talk to tonight's special guest, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping to get the conversation started.
Glad to be here, Senator Brown, and hello to our audience. My name is Kathleen Gomez, and I'm joining you all from the border of Arizona and Sonora, Mexico. I would just like to say that it astounds me that at this time in our modern democracy that we actually have citizens who are taxed but yet have no representation to fight for their rights in Congress. It's pretty amazing. And it's amazing we're all talking about immigration and the rights of people who are here, yet here we are, our nation's capital, citizens who were born in the United States, have lived in the capital, and yet they have no representation. It just pretty much is astounding. And with that, I would like to introduce our guest this evening, Anise Jenkins, president of Stand Up for Democracy in D.C. Coalition. Stand Up has been involved in the struggle for equal rights in the district for more than 20 years. Hi, Anise, and thanks for joining us. Let's get started. Anise, are you there?
Thank you so much. I am here, and I'm ready to go.
Fantastic. I wanted to kind of open up and ask you a question about your organization. You run this organization that is in the middle of this fight. Tell us how and why you got involved.
Well, Stand Up for Democracy in D.C., more popularly known as Free D.C., was established in 1997 as a reaction to the Congress taking over all the local powers of our council, of our local government, except parks and recreation. Here you had the nation's capital, supposedly the capital of the oldest and most active democracy in the world, where the Congress decided at 11:47 midnight in July to say that we don't like the way you're running your city. We don't like the way your community is acting. We don't like who you elected for mayor. We don't like the fact that you may not have at this time a surplus in your budget. Think about budget now. And we're going to take over all of your rights. And that's how Stand Up started. We had been under what was called a control board since 95, which was really supposed to be governing and seeing that our financials were in order, but Launch Faircloth of North Carolina, whom we did not elect and who nobody really knew who he was in D.C., decided, we feel, because he was running for reelection, would use D.C. as its convenient whipping boy and say, well, it's almost midnight. Nobody's really paying too much attention. So I'm going to get a bill through the Congress to take away the local government of the District of Columbia. And that's how Stand Up started. There were organizations, churches, just regular citizens like myself who said, no, you're not. We won't accept this. This is not acceptable. And some of us met on the White House, in front of the White House, got on the fence, and we were arrested. And from there, we continued to go on civil disobedience, protests, letters, everything that we could do to say that we want to be treated just like everyone else.
Well, you know, Anise, I'm not sure that people fully grasp the import of what you're saying. You know, basically, the control board was martial law in the District of Columbia. They took away even our home rule, the limited home rule we had, they suspended. So it's just amazing that they can do this sort of thing in the District of Columbia. And let me just tell you a little bit about Anise, since Anise and I work together. Anise really has been a stalwart in the fight for statehood for the District of Columbia. She has been the leader of one of the most effective groups to work on this issue. And we're very proud of Anise. She's a homegrown girl, a Washingtonian, who has a master's degree and MBA from Howard University, one of our many great universities here in the District of Columbia. So we're very happy to have you on the show. And please, America, understand that what Anise is saying, we had no control. They made all the decisions for the people of the District of Columbia until they got rid of the control board. Given that, Anise, I have a question, and that is, this struggle has gone on for more than 200 years. It's been 40 years since we've had home rule. Why do you think our progress has been so slow?
Well, this is a civil rights struggle, and it's a serious struggle. Some people may say, well, you know, why is it that way? First of all, most people that may be hearing you this evening probably are not aware of the fact that people in D.C. pay their federal taxes, do everything, serve in the military, do everything that is required of a full citizen of this country, but do not have the rights that full citizens have. So the fact that the issue is so unknown, and actually the government, the national federal government's dirty little secret, it really affects the situation. We need people around the country to advocate on our behalf. But if they don't know that the situation exists, they see no reason to advocate. We don't have advocates on our behalf. Also, we're fighting the federal government. We're fighting vested interests. As I said, there are people who are in Congress who oppose our rights to have representation in the House and Senate. One, there's something that our non-voting delegate, our first one, Reverend Walter Fauntroy, said very clearly. He said D.C. at that time was too progressive, We voted for issues that were what considered progressive or liberal at that time. Too urban, we would be the first predominantly urban state in the country. Too black, too African American, and at that time and still ongoing, a lot of the opposition and a lot of the chairs of the committees in the Congress who ruled us were headed by Southern conservatives and two Democrats. D.C. within recent times has voted overwhelmingly for Democrats, voted over 94% for President Obama. I guess some people say, well, the Democrats will just have it locked up. But our opinion is that doesn't matter. We are citizens. We should get our full rights. We do everything that's required of us, and willingly.
And, you know, it's surprising to me that people can have this rationale, that they can deny you that right based on what their fear is, how you're going to vote. I mean, I think if it happened anywhere else in the country, it would just, you know, people would just go crazy and be ready to have a revolution. But for all those reasons you stated about it being too urban and too black, it's just really sad. And we would hope that today things have changed enough that that wouldn't be such an issue. And one other question, a follow-up one on what you were stating about the fact that the country doesn't know about this issue. When you do go out, can you tell us a little bit if you do go out around the country and visit to try to educate people and what their response to it is?
Well, when we actually in D.C., we don't actually have to go out. I mean, it would be fantastic if we had the funding and the resources to do that, if our elected officials who are supposed to be able to do that, Senator Brown, Senator Strauss, and our non-voting representative, were able to do that, if they could afford to do that and go out and lobby for us. People come to D.C. all the time. We're going to be doing a survey on the National Mall during the Smithsonian Festival. There's a million people who come from all over the country and all over the world. So they're coming to us. And first of all, when you say, well, you know, D.C. isn't supported by the country, we actually pay very, very high federal taxes. But you look at the Congress right there across from the monument, you're on the mall, just look right there. We have no one who can vote for us in that building. People are shocked. They are completely shocked. And they say it's wrong.
Well, you know, following up on that, first of all, what you said, Anise, about us fulfilling all the obligations of citizenship, we not only do it, but we do it as well as anybody does it. We pay the highest per capita income taxes in America, and we not only serve in the military, but we are the proud home of over 40 Congressional Medal of Honor winners. The man that wrote our national anthem, Francis Scott Key, was on a mission for the D.C. National Guard when he was captured and wrote the song that we all stand up and put our hands over our hearts for. So Washington, D.C. is really has been part of America since America began, and we play a pivotal role. So, it's incredible, as Kathleen says, that we find ourselves in this position. But, you know, we started this show with the idea that we wanted to start a national dialogue. So what do you think our listeners can do to get the conversation started where they live? And more importantly, what can they do to help us in D.C. to attain statehood? Anise, what do you think they can do?
Well, actually, I think one thing that is really easy that they could do is that we're in the great position right now that we have legislation on the Hill. We have a statehood bill in the House of Representatives and also one in the Senate. And it's been a long time since we've been in this position. So if they could pick up the phone or write a letter or even go past their congressional representative's office and say, I would really like you to change the situation in D.C. You have some wonderful people that live there, and I want you to support the statehood bill for D.C. That would really, really do a lot to help us, because I think most of the representatives don't see it as a vital issue. Of course, they're thinking about their own constituents and what their constituents want. But a letter, a phone call would be something that would really stand out, because I think at this time, as I said, they don't really think that their constituents care.
Well, and you know, I'm sorry,
no,
Anise.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about statehood and legislation, you know, I have a question. You know, is statehood the answer for the residents? Because, you know, you're talking about legislative remedies, and I guess there's also, you really haven't talked about this retrocession, but, you know, why is statehood maybe the thing that you're going for that's better than any of the other things you could do?
Well, there's a number of reasons. First of all, D.C. Residents voted for statehood in 1980. We voted for a referendum for statehood. So we've actually said that this is what we want. And that's one of the requirements of the Constitution, that the people have to want this. So we voiced our opinion that we want to be a state. Statehood is a simple solution to our problems. If we are a state, we automatically get the rights of all citizens in the rest of the country. We get voting representation in the House and the Senate. We are able to control our own local laws. We would be able to vote for our own justices, our own judges, which we can't do now. We would not have to send our own local budget made out of our tax money, out of our pockets, to the Congress so that it could be changed or altered as it has been in the past. So statehood, which could be go through the Congress, win a vote by one vote over the other, you know, just like the majority vote of any other legislation that goes through the Congress, is an easy, simple, and constitutional solution. We don't have to worry about retrocession. D.C. residents didn't vote for retrocession. They don't want retrocession. So that would be another solution, actually, that is undemocratically imposed on us. We just want democracy to work. That's all we're asking for, just for democracy to work for us.
Yeah, and you know, there's another problem with retrocession too, and that is that the people of Maryland would have to accept us back, and they have never voted for retrocession. They don't seem to like the idea very much, any more than the people of D.C. And I think it is Anise talked about the legislation that's now before Congress, the new Columbia Admission Act, which is in both the House and Senate. And I think it's really telling, especially when you talk about retrocession, that both senators from Maryland are co-sponsor of the bill to give us statehood. So if they wanted us back, they would have taken us. But instead, they're standing up for the rights of the people of the District of Columbia to have the same rights that everybody else has. And I think that really says a lot about where they stand on retrocession. You know, I'd like to talk for just a minute. We just had a referendum that passed overwhelmingly in the District of Columbia for budget autonomy. And I'd like to – I know that you and I both, Anise, testified before the city council that budget autonomy, although we weren't against it, wasn't necessarily the right path to take. What are your feelings about that?
As I was saying, Stand Up started in 1997, and this is an ongoing fight. We became the capital in 1801, and really our position is that budget autonomy is absolutely one of our rights that we want. It's crucial to our existence as an effective local government, but that's part of statehood. And at this point, after 212 years of being in existence, I think it's time to take the leap. Rather than taking another step, let's take a leap towards full citizenship. That's our opinion. We want the whole thing. We don't. Steps are good, but you can't guarantee what the next step will be. You can't guarantee when the next step will come. So our opinion is we want to put all of our energy. We want to send a simple message to the rest of the country. Our simple message is that we want statehood.
Well, you know, I have to agree with you, and I've often said that imagine that civil rights seem to work this way, that you either have your rights or you don't have your rights, just like you just said. And I say imagine Rosa Parks, for example, saying that she would accept sitting in the middle of the bus. That's just not how it works. You pay the same fare. You ride the same bus. You should get to pick your seat. And that's something that America decided on a long time ago. So I agree with you 100% on that. Is there something else that you would like to ask, Kathleen?
Well, you know, I guess I'm trying to wrap my brain around the whole idea that people in D.C. don't have the rights that everyone else does. You know, we talk about democracy and how proud we are of what the United States government stands for, and yet it's like you've become the forgotten people. I think people also tend to think that, I don't know, maybe it's just buildings in D.C., that there aren't real living people that live in D.C. that are, you know, common day workers like electricians and plumbers and, you know, I'm just trying to wrap my brain around it. I find it really, really hard that these are representatives who not only have to represent their constituents, but always make decisions all the time about the good of the country, and how they don't act on this right away is just a real telling part that we really have to make this an issue that everyone understands and knows about. So hopefully this radio show will do it. So, Michael, do you have anything else, Mr. Senator Brown, say? Or?
Well, I'd just like to say that that's exactly right on, and that's why we started this show. And it's funny that one of my favorite quotes is from a high school student who went to her legislators in Missouri and tried to get them to pass a resolution and in support of statehood for the District of Columbia. And when the legislator said to her, "I really don't know anything about this issue," she said to him that he ought to find another job because every American should know about this. And I think that's absolutely true, that every American should know about this. You know, Dr. King said that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and I believe that.
Well, Ms. Jenkins, yes, I want to thank you.
Agree.
I want to thank you for
so
joining
much.
Us. And, you know, I just want to comment on how much I know how much work you've put into this, and it's, you know, always you've been at it a long time, and I know sometimes it can be very difficult, but I want to congratulate you on your effort to help everyone in your community actually become a citizen of the United States, and we hope that this, you know, you'll come back and join us again, and we can continue talking about to America about correcting this, you know, historic wrong, which has existed for far, far too long, and hopefully within the next, very soon in our future, this will be something that we'll be saying, well, you know what? It's going to be fantastic when you guys do get your rights, when you become full citizens of this country and enjoy what everyone else in our country and every state has been doing for such a long time.
Well, thank you so much for talking about the issue. And I just want to say that I know we're going to do this. This is going to happen. This is the last barrier in the civil rights movement. And I have faith in the American people that this is going to be corrected very soon.
Well, I'd also like to add to that, niece, as somebody that knows you personally and has been involved in this struggle with you, that I cannot tell you how much I admire you for all your hard work. You're an inspiration to all of us in the struggle, who struggle for the rights of the loyal citizens of D.C., and we hope that you'll come back again, because this is just the start of a discussion that we need to continue, and we need to involve America. And thanks so much for being with us tonight and helping us kick it off. We hope that you'll come back again real soon.
All right, Senator Brown, free D.C., statehood now.
Free D.C., statehood now. So now you've heard what we have to say on the issue, and now we want to hear what you have to say.
Yes, that's right. Let's hear from you guys out there in America. We're listening, so call in at 888-429-5471. Again, that's 888-429-5471.
And we're going to take a short break here, and we're going to play for you a song that was written by three Washingtonians who all had amazing Motown musical careers. One of them was with the Temptations, one of them was with the Four Tops, and one sang with the Drifters. As Kathleen said, we're a community of artists, plumbers, electricians, doctors, lawyers, school teachers. So here for a short break is Leonard Coleman and Blunt with Stand Up for DC. We'll be back in a minute. Please call in. And we're back. I should also mention that Anaya Gregory, daughter of comedian and activist Dick Gregory, who's a friend of our cause, is also featured on the song you just heard, which, by the way, is available on iTunes. And the voice you heard at the end of the song was that of the director of the ACLU in Washington, D.C., Johnny Barnes, and he makes an excellent point that we've resolved a lot of the anachronisms, the original prohibition for people to be involved in our system, for African Americans, for women, for Native Americans. And Washington really is the last great struggle for inclusion. So let's turn to the phones. I see that we have a caller on line one.
David Schwartzman, are you with us?
Yes, I am, and it's a real pleasure to be on this internet radio. And as Senator Brown said, Anise has inspired us, but Senator Brown has inspired us. I was really fortunate to be in an electoral contest with Senator Brown, and we had a wonderful time. I was representing the D.C. State of Green Party, and we had a real wonderful dialogue about the struggle for D.C. statehood, and I really applaud his efforts. He and Anise have been tireless in their work for D.C. statehood. I just want to make a comment and get a reaction. Senator Brown, Anise referred to the control board era, and I think Senator Brown referred to home rule. That it basically is a shackle on us. We have limited power under home rule. But there's another side to this besides promoting our lobbying on a national and even international level for statehood. As on a national level, of course, Senator Brown and our other shadow reps are, senators and reps are active in that. But there's also an international level that I think Tim Cooper should be mentioned in this, and essentially putting the U.S. government on the dock for violation basic human rights in this. In the past, it's been our political rights. I just want to briefly refer back to home rule. If these are the shackles that are binding us, we have to push against these shackles and break them. In other words, push the limits of home rule. And I believe that our local elected government has not done this. They have not pushed the limits of home rule in a number of areas. And that has led to really shocking statistics that we see in D.C., namely very high income inequality, very high child poverty, and other problems, including the closure of neighborhood public schools. And Johnny Bonds was heard. He is the lawyer for an effort of parents and teachers east of the river to block the threatened closure of 15 neighborhood public schools. So this is a challenge to all of us in D.C. to push the limits of home rule, make a progressive tax structure, do better for our folk. We simply... our elected government has been really pathetic in a number of areas. And I'll just mention one other thing. Anise Jenkins was part of a group that included me and others to give a report card and actually report on the state of human rights in D.C. And this was done under the aegis of the American Friends Service Committee. We had a press conference a year ago, February. And some of the grades were F, like child welfare and poverty. And our elected government can do better, given our tax base that Senator Brown actually referred to. We have a very high per capita income tax payment from D.C., but that's because we have very high income inequality. And we have a lot of very wealthy people who are actually paying the lowest tax rate now in local taxes. So this is a challenge to all of the residents of D.C. If we want to empower the struggle for D.C. statehood, we need to address the economic and social human rights as well as the political. And I don't mean to downgrade in any way the valuable efforts to lobby for the statehood bills and to further educate our residents to be more active in the struggle. Anyway, those are my comments. I'm sorry if I went so long, but please bounce them off.
Well, now, first let me say a few things about Dr. Schwartzman. First of all, he is a tireless advocate for those less fortunate in the District of Columbia. So my personal thanks for all your hard work, David. And let me tell you, Dr. Schwartzman is now a professor emeritus, retired professor.
Yes,
from Howard University.
At Howard University.
Chemistry, not one of those silly subjects
geochemistry.
Yeah, not one of those silly subjects that I studied, like social science, but real hard science. And just on a personal note, this man was the nicest person that I've ever encountered in politics. I think we had to answer a question on why we were better than the other candidates, and his answer was that he really liked me. So you don't get a nicer, you know, there's a lot of nasty politics that goes on in Washington, D.C., but David Schwartzman has never been part of it. He, like I say, he's been a tireless advocate, and he's right. You know, this hurts us on all sorts of levels. We lose $2 billion in tax money every year $2 billion in money that we could get because we can't tax income at its source. And let me just explain that to you. If you live in New Jersey and you work in New York, you pay a tax to New York. Every jurisdiction is like that except the District of Columbia. And also, as Dr. Schwartzman points out, we get politicians that maybe aren't the best politicians we could get. I mean, I probably shouldn't say that as an elected official, but, you know, we're a colony. So I'll give you a great example that we had a great senator named Ed Brooke, who was a Washingtonian who came back from fighting in a segregated unit during the Second World War, and there was nothing for him to vote for, nothing for him to run for, rather. So he moved to Massachusetts and became a United States Senator from Massachusetts. I think he served three terms, all very distinguished. So this hurts us on all sorts of levels. Our community, our tax base, our kids, our education system. And I thank you for calling in, Dr. Schwartzman, because you've asked
it. Thank you for not entirely deserved praise on your part. But we will continue the struggle, and we'll all work together to get stated. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome, and let's remind everyone to keep in tune with us every Sunday, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 4 o'clock out here in Arizona and California. And I think, you know, what I would like to also comment is that not only are you talking about financial impact, but there has to be an emotional toll to not having it, and it sounds kind of silly, but when you don't have that right to go and vote, I remember I lived in D.C. for 10 years. I lived in Adams Morgan, and I would go and vote for the president, but I remember thinking, is that all I can vote for? It was a strange feeling. Then when I moved to New York, lived there for 20 years, and went into the voting booth, I mean, it was amazing to see all the people I could vote for, from the judge and a sheriff and, you know, county supervisor, whatever, on and on. And it really opened my eyes how it just has to have an emotional toll on the people who live in D.C.
Absolutely. Well, I see we have another caller, Diego from Arizona on line three. Diego, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Well, do you have a question or a comment?
Kind of just a question overall, kind of about the issue you guys were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. I've never actually lived in D.C., so I don't know, you know, specifics. But I do, you know, obviously you guys have a lot of government and federal buildings. You know, I think almost every federal agency has their headquarters there. And then, of course, there's like the White House and Congress and all that. So if you were to make it a state, and I believe that originally the reason D.C. was kind of made separate was so that it didn't fall under any state's jurisdiction. If you were a state, how would you guys, like, divide up? How would you divide up, say, you know, the federal and the state, you know, lands and stuff? Would it be kind of checkered?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question, Diego. And the truth is that that's why the district was founded the way it was, but it no longer serves that purpose. And what we would do, the Constitution says that the District of Columbia cannot be any larger than 10 miles square, but it doesn't say how small it can be. So what we would do is we would carve out what's called the National Service Cap, the National Capital Service Area, which we've already done, actually, and that would remain under control of the federal government. So that would still be the capital of the United States, and the government, with the federal government, would control all that property the way it still does. And the rest of the area, the residential area around the District of Columbia, would become a new state, the state of New Columbia. And if there are federal government enclaves in that area, they would be treated like they are in any state. So, for example, California, you have McClellan Air Force Base, and that's under the control of the federal government. We similarly have Bowling Air Force Base, and that would remain under the control of the federal government. But all the area outside this National Capital Service Area would become the state of New Columbia. And this has been done, the shape of the district has been changed once before in 1847 when Virginia was afraid that we were going to free the slaves, which we did, and they took back their portion that they gave the district. Mm-hmm. So the district's already been changed one time. Does that answer your question?
Right. Yeah, I just had one other kind of thing. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. I just wanted to comment. That is a really good question because I had never thought about it until you mentioned it, and I thought, wow, that's true. How would you? So great question. Go ahead,
thank
Diego.
You. The other thing is also is that, you know, the government, you know, a lot of people say it's like a living government, you know, it's changing. There's all these new types of issues and departments that would be formed. So say in 10 years, there's, let's say, a new division, a new government, a federal government for, let's say, cyber warfare, whatever, any kind of, you know, new changing thing. Would they then be, how would, the issue would be with, like, they would need new land. So how would they just be able to take the land out of the state of, what, New Columbia, I believe you called it?
No, actually, the trend in the District of Columbia is to move the federal government outside the District of Columbia. There are more federal workers that live in Virginia. There are more federal workers that live in California. There may even be more federal workers that live in Arizona. I don't know. But D.C. is no longer the center of the federal government. And all the federal property that the federal government now owns, they would continue to retain. So right now, if you wanted to open, let's say, the Department of Homeland Security, which is now opening in the district, it's the largest single civil project in the district, and it's being opened at St. Elizabeth's, which was a former hospital in the District of Columbia. The federal government actually had to pay for that property. And they would continue to have to do that. But those are two excellent questions.
All right.
And that's great. Well,
that's pretty much.
Go ahead. What were you
going to
say?
That was just generally my two kind of questions regarding it. I just wasn't sure how it would, work. I didn't realize that there was no limit. So, yeah.
Well, as a citizen of Arizona, let me ask you a question, Diego. How do you feel about statehood for the district? Do you think the people of the district should have the same rights as everybody else in America?
I do. I do agree that, I was actually, I didn't know until about a year or two ago that was a thing. And I was surprised. I do believe that statehood should, citizenship, full vote, and to the whole thing package should be given to everyone. I kind of can see both sides of it just because I do understand how, if we were to become a state, there would become two new senators, and they would probably be Democrat. And I agree that it's not fair to hold, a person's political party or agenda over, like, as hostage. But it's kind of, I feel like in the world, politics are dirty and it happens. And, I feel like, yes, it should happen, but I do think there will be some way that you have to compromise possibly with the Republicans just to get that done.
Well, we're trying to figure out what way that is, but thanks so much for your call and for your consideration of the issue. I think you've asked some very good questions, and we appreciate you calling in.
Yes, and spread the word, Diego, out there in Arizona. Yeah. Spread the word that this is an issue and it should be something that's given to the last colony in the United States.
Right.
Thanks. He brings up an excellent point, Kathleen, and that is that he didn't know anything about this, and 80% of America doesn't know about this. They did a survey back in 2005, a local public interest group called DC Vote that works on this issue did a national survey, and almost 80% of the people surveyed said that they thought we had the same rights that every other American has. Because, as you keep saying, Kathleen, it's hard to wrap your head around the idea that the people of the nation's capital don't have the same rights that everybody else has.
Exactly. I was just thinking because I have, sons that have turned 18. And I thought when she mentioned the fact that 18-year-olds, they now have a vote because they can be drafted into a war. And so then how does that impact the 18-year-olds who live in D.C.?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, that's a real problem as a father, I have a son, as you well know, and he could be sent off to war, and I don't have anybody that represents me in Congress that has a voice that can make a vote whether we, you know, can cast a vote whether we go to war or not. So unlike parents from everywhere else, we can't decide whether our kids go to war or not. And that's a right we should have.
Oh, that's absolutely right, especially in today's world when it could happen in a minute. You know, you just never know what might be in store tomorrow. I just, you know, that again, we have to kind of maybe make America realize these very basic freedoms that people in D.C. don't have. And when you put it into those kind of, you know, I don't know if you want to call them blocks or whatever, I would think it would be horrifying to anybody who has a child that could go to war to think that you couldn't vote on as big of an issue as that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know that in the District of Columbia, we've had to fight. I mean, the things that David Schwartzman, Dr. Schwartzman was saying, we could go on and on and on about this. Even it goes from the ridiculous to the sublime. Last year, we had a fight, a full political fight that involved our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, to keep our World War I memorial. We had a World War I memorial that was built in the District of Columbia on the National Mall, and it was paid for by Washington, D.C. school children who actually went and collected nickels and dimes to build the memorial in the early 1900s. And there was somebody that wanted to put up a National War Memorial, and Congress said, well, let's just take the D.C. War Memorial and make it a national memorial. And we had to fight to keep our war memorial. I mean, it's crazy.
That's amazing. And you would think that our senators and our representatives would be very kind of in tune or sensitive to this kind of issue, because they more than anyone understand what they're supposedly fighting for. And that's the freedom. And the number one of our basic freedoms is the right to vote. And I always think of the people when the Afghanistan people got their votes right and they proudly, you know, had that red dot on their finger. You know, just that sheer ability to vote, to have somebody represent you, is just something that Americans, I think, take for granted. And here we have, I mean, how many people live in D.C. again?
630,000. More than Wyoming and more than Vermont.
Oh, my gosh. And they don't have a right, the right to vote for their representatives. And I think that's what we have to kind of just make sure people understand that, you know, more people in the state of, what was it, Wyoming, you said?
Yeah, Wyoming. Yes.
That's incredible. And we as a nation should be pretty, I feel like it's a strong word, but we should be ashamed that we've allowed this to happen.
Yeah, absolutely, especially with our veterans. Imagine that we have 40 Congressional Medal of Honor winners, and when these brave men and women come home, the few that do come home, because many, many times that medal is issued posthumously, but imagine the ones that come home, and then they don't have equal rights. They put their lives on the line for America, and then they don't have their equal rights. It's of all the things that bother me about it, I think the fact that we don't extend these rights to veterans bothers me more than any other thing. And, you know, you said it earlier, Kathleen. It's, you know, it's a basic right that we should all have. And it's incredible that in this day and age, we know we don't have the same rights as every other American citizen. So that's what it's about.
That's,
you know,
right.
I got 207,000 votes when I ran for office. This is another thing. I got 207,000 votes. That's more votes than 8 United States senators who now serve in the United States Senate. And as Thomas Jefferson said, the right to govern, the legitimate right to govern, comes from the consent of the governed. So I had 207,000 people vote for me, and I get to sit on the radio and talk with you, which I'm not complaining about because I love that. But, you know, I should also get to cast the vote.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, to think that people of D.C. still want this vote so much that they go out and vote for you. Not, and I believe vote for you because you really do represent, you're very passionate about the issue. I've worked with you, and I have admiration for the fact that you keep on fighting without any kind of pay, with just kind of basically a shadow title, if you want to call it, and you keep on fighting for what is important. And I don't know. We just got to change this. That's all there is. Like Anise said, you know, it's going to happen, and we're just going to make it happen.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that Shadow Politics, the new show that we've just started, I think that's going to be the tipping point. That's really going to – we're going to change it. We're going to get the word out. And this is a injustice that I don't think can stand on its own. I think that once people of America understand that it's out there, they'll work with us to resolve it. And I'd like to say to all those out there who have joined us today, thanks for joining us. We hope you'll join us again next week on Cinco de Mayo, when we'll discuss more important issues that affect our lives and affect your life. We want really to start a dialogue. We want to get something going so that the voiceless in America can finally be heard here in Washington. Kathleen?
Yes, and anybody out there that feels that there's just a burning desire to speak about something, please call us and we'll talk about it. We want to have that dialogue. We want to be able of people to have such passionate ideas who maybe have sit on opposite sides of the aisle to get back to what used to make us great, the ability to talk to one another and realize we may think differently, we may disagree, but we're still Americans and we still have that unbelievable ability to fight and what for each other, what's right for each other, to agree, to disagree.
That's
so
right.
We have to.
And if you want to learn more about statehood, go to www.statehoodnow.org. Sign our petition. Thanks for listening. We hope we'll see you next week. This is Senator Michael Brown saying thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll call us. We hope you'll stay in touch. And thank you, Kathleen Gomez, for once again spending an hour with me. I think you're a great resource. And I think you and I will be able to do this, Kathleen.
I'm excited. And let me tell you, to everyone who is listening and called in, thank you. And with that, I want to say adios from la frontera de Arizona y Mexico, Sonora, Mexico. Adios, mis amigos.
Okay, adios. Thank you. Give the people their right to vote.